sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your late Sunday. I am Mark Carmen. He is Jared Payton.
What's going on, man?
I'm more intimidated by you today than I normally am.
Why are you intimidated by me?
You are a champion now. You are a dancing superstar. You have done stuff that few, if any, man has ever accomplished. Football field, soccer field, business. That was enough where I could feel like I was on the same, you know, plane with you. But now you got the dancing.
Yeah, the Dancing with Chicago Celebrities champion has changed my life. New nickname, Twinkle Toes.
Has it changed your life? Yeah, who's reached out to you around your dancing championship?
Listen, everybody. First of all, the video, and you saw it yesterday, or like this past week, you were looking at the video over
Stephanie Menendez,
20,000 views on Facebook.
My
right?
man, give me a little.
And so, you know, people saw my dad on Soul Train and back in the day with the cutoff shirt, and I'm just keeping up with the family tradition.
Well, I want to get a little bit more in depth with you around the dancing, but we should start with the story of the week, and we talked about it a ton yesterday. I think people are actually maybe getting a little burnt out on it.
I am.
Right. So, but Adam LaRoche we have a statement now from Chicago White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf. I think it's worth reading here.
Go ahead.
Here's the chairman. I have taken the past few days to personally meet with everyone involved, including Adam LaRoche, members of our front office, uniformed staff, and some of our active players. I continue to have nothing but the greatest regard for Adam. In fact, my respect for him has grown during this process, and I applaud his desire to spend more time with his family. And the $13 million, I don't have to pay him. That's not in the statement. I continue to have complete faith in the skills and abilities of the leadership group of our baseball operations department, in Ken Williams, Rick Hahn, Robin Ventura. I also appreciate the passion and commitment to one another shown by our players, Robin, our coaching staff, and our front office. As with many things in life, much of this was a result of miscommunication and misunderstanding rather than this being a case of anyone not telling the truth. I do not believe there is anyone to directly blame in this situation. While there is no doubt this might have been handled differently, the fact remains that this is an internal matter that we have discussed and now resolved. Per my request, White Sox employees will no longer discuss this matter publicly. I felt it was appropriate to release the statement to close the issue for everyone in the organization, from the front office to the players in the clubhouse, so we can focus on opening day and winning baseball games for our fans. I'm fully confident this matter will soon be behind us, and that will grow even stronger and more united as a team and as an organization.
Yeah! You know, it comes on. I, listen, there's so much going on with all this.
Little journey. Mike Jacobson wants you to get closer to your mic.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know.
He wants you right up on top of that.
I'm going to get it.
I actually, you don't see it, but I have an apparatus that's attached my head to the mic so Jacobson doesn't yell at me.
I'm closer. This whole situation seems, and from the beginning of it, when I tweeted something out, when I saw Ken Rosenthal's first tweet, and I didn't respond to anything else after that, after I started to see the developments of the story, and people were coming at me really upset, and some people agreeing with what I said, I was just basically putting his tweet into my own statement of what I saw, and next thing you know, I'm getting all these tweets.
What was your tweet for? Just remind us, please.
The tweet was just that, you know, Adam LaRoche is stepping away from the game because the White Sox want to kind of, I guess, don't want his kid in the locker room. That's what I said. Something like that.
Okay.
And it just went on and on. People were tweeting me. Listen, I've been on both sides of this, Carm.
Well, that's why we're starting here, by the way, because Jared's got it. You have a unique respect on this. You are the son, I believe me, of Walter Payton.
Yes, sir.
So you I would think, have a unique perspective on the whole situation.
Yeah, I saw this as a little kid of being in the locker room with my father back in the day. And then I also, as a player in the NFL and even in college, when I got to the University of Miami to see some of my teammates have kids come into the locker room. Yeah, they would come at certain times, but I have never been around and seen a kid that was in the locker room all the time. And I'll say this, and I truly believe this. I just don't believe for a little kid, a young man, that he should be in a locker room. That's a great place for him to be all the time. Every once in a while, yeah, I think it's cool. Do I respect Adam LaRoche for wanting to be around his kid and really loving it? It's hard for me to say that everybody in that locker room was okay with it, especially some of the new guys that were added to the organization recently.
Right. And we were talking before the show, and one of the points that I thought you made was interesting. Like, Walter or Michael.
Yes.
Or, I guess I'm thinking in Cubs terms, Rhino, maybe Sammy in their prime, White Sox-wise, the Big Hurt. Guys of that ilk, they could get away with some stuff.
But they wouldn't do it.
But, right.
They wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't and didn't.
No. And I mean, it's hard because a lot of people started to talk about just the issues with, why isn't his son in school? Well, he gets homeschooled. I get that. But don't you want, as a parent myself, I want my kid, if he's going to be homeschooled, I still want him to have, hopefully he's around his friends, hanging around his friends and young kids to learn how to develop and not be around a bunch of grown people all the time. Like, if your dream is for your son to be a ball player long term, I get that. You want him around and being around. But you tell me if I'm wrong. What about Ken Griffey Jr.?
I get a whole list of them. Steph Curry, Del Curry, Ken Griffey Jr., Ken Griffey Sr., right? I mean, you're talking about a whole host of guys. Barry Bonds, Bobby Bonds. I mean, there's a ton of guys who've had, I mean, Pete Rose had his kid around the game for a long time, right? Kenny Williams' son is in the NFL.
But and the other thing that got me, it wasn't that it was a band. It was just to dial it back just a little bit.
Right.
So that's all they were asking.
Right. But I think a lot of parents out there, and how old is your son now?
He's going to be 4 coming up this week.
Okay.
And I love him to death. But listen, when it comes to business, and I love being around him. If anybody follows me on Twitter, Snapchat, I'm with my son all the time. But when it comes to business, like my father used to say, when he went to work, that was business. He had to go take care of business. And as a kid, you didn't like it, but you know what? As I grew older, I respected it. I understood what it was all about.
So would you be like, Dad, can I go to work with you today? I mean, I think most kids do that, let alone ones who have a father in the NFL.
And he would. He would take me every once in a while. But football is a little bit different than baseball because I've never been in a clubhouse for a long period of time. But with football, you have meetings and stuff that you have to go to and watching film. It would be so hard for me. Someone would have to be watching me constantly and not just sitting around. And I'd cause so much trouble
right
by myself.
Right. And listen, I think a lot of parents out there, they want their son or daughter to either A, play professional sports, or B, more likely play in college, get that scholarship, or C, just experience sports on the competitive level because they're a competitive person and they think that sports is great and it's a great way to, you know, mature and the whole deal. And sometimes, you know, we see it all the time, parents living out their athletic dreams through their kids.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
We look at this story, and I know so many people are looking at it and arguing about it, but can't we just look at it for what it is for the man? Listen, if that's what he decides to do, he walked away from $13 million because he believed that family was more important.
His decision.
Wanted to be around the kid. I can't hate on him for that.
I gave him a little bit of hate, but
you did?
Yes, because it's a lot of dough, and you can do a.
But he's made a lot of dough though, Carm.
Right, but it's
so if he set himself up for the fact where, I mean, he's trying to that's a big life decision that he's in some type of decision that he's showing his son long term that. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good in this story too.
I'll fully say it's unfair to put on what I'm putting on him, but at the end of the day, that's $13 million worth of good he could do in this world if he chose to. It's unfair. I'm not saying that's you know, it's not for everybody, but like, we all should be in here, and in my mind, in my utopian Mark Carmen world, we should all be in here for ourselves, but also for the greater good too. And here's a guy.
But his greater good, though, is make sure his family's okay. His family's already good.
His family's okay.
Yeah, he doesn't need that 13.
Well, okay. We could have done a lot of good with that. It's a bizarre decision. Weekday mornings, 4 to 10, it has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news. I want to have a little parenting, getting your kid to the next level discussion. If you're a parent that has a kid that you've gotten to whatever level, and how much involvement have you had, and how have you stepped back? That's what we're going to do a little bit next year. 312-981-7200. He's Jared Payton. I'm Mark Carmen. This is The Beat with you till 6 on 720 WGN.
I think anytime a guy either is released, retired, you know, that stuff's always tough. So, you know, I'm dealing with that more than any of the other stuff. So, you know, that's my concern, is to get him focused right back on, you know, getting back on track and getting ready for the season. So everybody has their job to do and get out there and be ready to do it.
Robin Ventura, your Chicago White Sox manager. JP, you liking this tune?
Yeah, this is like one of my favorite songs from back in the day. I didn't know, I mean, MIA. This is one of my favorite songs. I used to listen to this in 2007 when I was in Montreal playing for the Alouettes.
With Mark Trestman.
Well, no, he wasn't there
yet. Oh, he wasn't
yet.
There yet?
No.
Okay.
Let's not talk about him
right now. Yeah, I don't want to ruin the mood here. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Jared Payne. This is The Beat with you till 6. Our executive producer / update / contributing man is Mike Jacobson. Thank you for having us on this Sunday afternoon. We are starting with the White Sox and Adam LaRoche, and also the statement released by Jerry Reinsdorf. Proper parenting. JP, I got three lists of parents, okay? I got three kinds of parents.
And you're not a parent.
And I'm not a parent. Not yet. Hopefully we'll get there someday. But I had two parents, and I know lots of parents, including you.
I know.
So here's my three kinds of parents, all right?
Yes.
Number one, the overly engaged coach, mom, and dad parent. That's the parent that is at every single Little League game, but doesn't just sit still, but is jumping up and down, is yelling at the coach, is yelling at the official, is yelling at the umpire. Pick a sport, whatever referee you want to pick. That's one parent.
Don't want to be that parent.
Don't want to be that parent. That parent seems to be growing, though, like,
yes,
by the second.
Yeah.
Okay. Parent number two. This is a parent that wants the best for his kid, son or daughter. And if the kid takes to sports, gets them involved and exposes them to a variety of stuff, and then if they take to one particular thing, hones in on it, and if they can afford it, they provide them with the best possible coaching, and they step back and allow it all to happen and don't push the kid over the top, or else he might end up doing something else.
He or she, yes.
I
want to be that parent. That's okay. The third.
That's the parent that I think everybody wants to be, thinks they are, but really isn't.
It's hard to find that middle ground.
It's a tough parent. It's a challenge to be that parent.
It really is.
Right. I mean, because you're so wound up watching it that, you know, it's hard to step back. And or you're, you know, you there's a lot of ways you can get out over your skis on being that perfect parent. The third parent for me is the disengaged parent. The parent that perhaps is, if it's sports related, they're playing their own stuff, they're not around their kid, they're not getting him involved, they're not giving him enough attention, they're not building up the confidence, and they're just kind of leaving the kid out on the vine to die. Mm. There's the third, the disengaged parent.
That one's kind of, it's not where anybody wants to be.
That's not where anybody wants to be, that's not where anybody would say they'll be, but you know that parent is out there.
Yes, there are.
I mean, I think that parent might even be more there than parent number one, the overly engaged. Like the disengaged,
right.
You know, they got too much going on in their lives. They're working, some maybe are working multiple jobs, or it doesn't even have to come down to work. So Adam LaRoche, where does he fall? I mean, he seems like the overly engaged, right? Clearly, we're not that into school. I'm taking my kid out of school.
It's hard because I don't know the man enough to say that. Oh. That's what he is, just because of the situation.
Right.
I don't know, Carm.
312-981-7200. If you have any parenting thoughts, feel free. As I'm trying to, I think we all can learn from the Adam LaRoche situation here on different levels here.
Yes.
Let's get Randy and Joliet on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Randy.
Hey, how you doing today?
Hey, man.
I'm the fourth type of parent. I'm the parent who doesn't want their kids in sports and wants them to pursue more intellectual prowess and coaches them that way and keeps them quite involved.
Do you have do you have kids, Randy?
I have two. I have two daughters.
And are they in?
I would rather that they learn the advantages and strategies of chess or Go than that they can swing a bat and hit a ball. Physical coordination is nice and all, but yeah, I think that there's more to this world.
But
Mark, I was supporting you here.
Okay.
I was going to say that I think you are right. I think all of these sports figures and all these teams and all the leagues need to take all these extra millions that they have laying around and do something good with them. No guy needs to make $12 million a year to play a game. $1 million, half a million, that should be fine for anybody to live on.
But Randy,
after that, all of that other money, do something good with it. Give it to some charities. We could support the homeless with it. We can do millions of great things with it. But instead, we do sports jerseys and bigger stadiums. And most of the bigger stadiums are paid for by, you know, the taxpayers and the people in the cities who don't even care about them.
Randy,
so, yeah.
Randy, you got Randy. We're hang on, my friend.
Hold on, Randy.
Thank you for the call. Actually, is what I'm trying to say because we're not bringing you back. But that was a great call, and we're gonna hit a ton of that coming up after news.
I got
a whole laundry list.
Address that.
All right, so we do got to get to the news, and we'll get to more calls, and I want to address all of that
as far as
what I'm saying with his money and what the whole deal here. 312-981-7200. You want to jump in? News in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.
From yesterday forward, we're showing up to play baseball. I don't think there's anything else to talk about. We have a job to do, and I think going forward, moving forward, that's what we're here for.
That is White Sox left-hander superstar Chris Sale. Moving forward, huh?
Think so?
Well, Jerry Reinsdorf has a gag order now on the team. He had that before, and Adam Eaton went on local radio, and Chris Sale before that, went ballistic at his locker. But seems like maybe the team's moving on now. I'm not sure. They probably are, I would think. Chris Sale, by the way, yesterday, JP, 5 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts, solid outing. And I thought when they showed him being taken out of the game by Robin Ventura, and there was all sorts of patting on the back and smiling and talking, and it was a love fest at the mound with Sale and Robin. So those two, they're on the same page.
Yeah, they're on the same page. I mean, you can tell just by when he was at his locker speaking about the whole situation with Adam LaRoche, he was really saying that this is Robin's clubhouse. He needs to be the one to police it. And anywhere I've ever been, I've seen a locker room where you have the players who pretty much police the locker room. And if there's issues, they figure it out themselves. They don't have to go to upper management to figure out what's going on in the locker room. Everywhere I've been, that's just a couple of different locker rooms.
I would hope that Chris would take down the jerseys of Adam and Drake LaRoche. Or at least when the season starts, that he doesn't continue the shrine at U.S. Cellular Field. That, to me, if I was Robin Ventura, I'd go to him and ask him, hey, man, listen, we got to move forward. Something along those lines.
What do you think Kenny was saying after he heard the comments from his ace?
No,
he couldn't have liked that.
No, and I think that Kenny would be calling his ace in. But I think it's important to remember who's got the leverage here. Chris Sale, listen, you don't want me? You can deal me away. I mean, there was a guy in Kansas City by the name of Zach Greinke. Phenomenal pitcher, now Cy Young Award winner. Zach Greinke didn't like what was going on with the Royals. They were losing year after year after year. Well, he started talking out about it and said, listen, I'm in the prime of my career. I'm not going to keep on giving away seasons to you guys. And they moved him to the Brewers, and he went to the playoffs with them in 2011, and then he went to the playoffs with the Dodgers in 13 and 14 and 15. I mean, maybe that's the vision that Chris Sale has for himself right now. I'm not going to keep giving away seasons to your half in, half out, ball club.
That was probably one of the first things that I thought of when I heard his remarks. That he doesn't always. I don't know if he truly is his heart here. I don't know, but you're not getting any younger. So
right.
I mean, you have to do whatever it takes to be able to make you happy and hopefully give you that ultimate success as an athlete.
312-981-7200. In about 5 minutes, we're going to do some civil liberties that are under attack in baseball as well that affects both the Cubs and the White Sox. and perhaps you, the sports fan. Kevin in Flossmoor, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. I hope you're having a great day, great show. I just wanted to give a little bit of, I don't know Adam LaRoche personally. I don't know what's in his head, but the thing is, you know, when you talk about, you know, with the manager and Sale being on the same page, I'm not sure which same page that would be, but I'll also tell you I'm a 20-plus year soccer official, actually nationally and state certified. The thing about the parents, when they come out and they're on the touch lines in the soccer soccer pitch, they are infusing a lot of their thoughts and, you know, I should have done this, I should have done this. And they're very critical of the kids. So I guess for Adam LaRoche, he's being very positive with his son. And when I hear parents being negative towards their children, boy or girl, it's my discretion to just let them know. I'll stop the match and I'll tell them, not to any one person, I'll tell them, what I want to hear from you, you're here in support. It is the nature of the game. I want you to be positive, and I want you to be positive towards your kids, towards the opposing players, with whatever's going on. Please be positive. So I guess that my major point is being positive for LaRoche, and there's, I'm sure, some negative within the locker room. I would just like to hear if you guys would explain what you said about being on the same page as far as the manager and Sale goes. How can you just explain, is that positive or is that negative of moving the 14-year-old kid away? Or
We got you, Kevin, and thank you for your service, by the way. You're doing tremendous work on the soccer fields, and you're helping out kids, and you're hopefully helping parents as well.
I'm trying to figure out what Kevin was talking about. I need to know what you were thinking about as being on the same page, and it might be different than what I was thinking.
Well, what are you saying, JP?
When I think of Robin and Chris Sale being on the same page, is that you look at two guys in this organization we've known watching the White Sox. There's always been some type of friction, and Robin's been a big part of that. And it seems like you have the players who really, really like Robin and who are around him. And yeah, there's been some stuff with Kenny and going up with Rick and, you know, everybody else. So there's been that divide, but it seems like that the players and their manager are pretty much on the same page.
Yeah, and listen, this is a positive thing for them. I think by your definition, Kevin, as far as being on the same page, that means that they're, you know, they're not being affected by outside things that really have nothing to do with winning baseball games. But listen, there's always been drama around that organization.
Always.
From Ozzie and Kenny and...
Let's not forget, there's some people that were in that locker room that came and spoke out. I don't know names, but that didn't... were questioning, why is this kid here all the time? So
that, and I mean, even go back with Frank Thomas. I mean, you know, even from a distance, one of the greatest players or the greatest player in the history of the White Sox. I mean, he's in a verbal battle with Kenny Williams. I mean, Kenny's got a pretty ramped up ego over there. I mean, he's not a guy that's just, you know, chilling out and just letting bygones be bygones. If something's bothering that guy, he's going to let you know. Via in the media or direct?
We know how Jerry Reinsdorf, though, keeps his guys. Make it, you know. All right. Well, listen, this last Friday night, I participated in the 11th annual Dancing with Chicago Celebrities event. It was presented by Arthur Murray Dance Centers. And I won the celebrity competition, took home the big, huge trophy that Mark Harmon wants to take a picture with. Thank you to everybody out there that supported me. It was an amazing event. We raised over $250,000 to fight breast cancer here in the Chicagoland area. But leading up to the event, I took a bunch of dances at Arthur Murray Dance Centers in Schaumburg. I love taking dance classes. They were fun, a great exercise, and also a great stress reliever. Guys, trust me, Take your wife or girlfriend dancing. She'll love it. It's a perfect date night. And they have 8 locations in the Chicagoland area, so you can find one near you. And right now, you and your significant other can have a lesson for $40. That's nothing. So go to ChicagoArthurMurray.com, get started, or you can call them right now, 312-644-7554. That's ChicagoArthurMurray.com. Start dancing today.
Stephen F. Austin leading Notre Dame 75-72, 1:03 to go in the second half. Coming back, there's another civil liberty that is under attack, and it's going to affect your baseball summer. We'll talk about it. 720 WGN.
For me, I did, and I really, I guess he probably will help me to quit because it's a really bad habit to have. But, you know, obviously, yeah, I really don't know because we're kind of adults, so we know what's good and what's bad for you. So it's, but, you know, rule is rule, and you just got to follow the rules, I guess.
How hard is that going to be for some guys?
I don't know. We probably have to get like a lot of nicotine gummies instead.
Because, you know, they're gonna outlaw that.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be hard, you know, because when you're an addict, pretty much, it's gonna be tough to quit cold turkey, you know.
Miguel Montero, your Chicago Cubs catcher, and also Dipper/tobacco user. Notre Dame, congratulations, yes. Fighting Irish fans. 76-75. They come back from 3 down to hit a 3 with 1.5 to go and beat Stephen F. Austin by 1. That's a significant win for the Irish and a significant heartbreaker for the Lumberjacks.
Yes. Hey, you know my feelings for Notre Dame. Love them. I'm just joking, man. I went to Miami.
I'm aware. It's fun to root against Notre Dame. That's what makes it fun.
It's all good. They're close to home, so yeah,
God bless them. Congratulations on the win into the Sweet 16. All right, so that was Miguel Montero. And if you missed the story earlier this week, here's the deal: you can no longer chew tobacco at both Wrigley Field and U.S. Cellular Field. Chicago joining a growing list earlier in the week. Alderman approved a ban on chewing tobacco at both professional and amateur sporting events. San Francisco, L.A., Boston, they've all done this. New York has legislation in place. The Mets and Yankees are on board. So you just heard from Miguel Montero, Cubs catcher, who's going to miss his dip. And then Joe Maddon said earlier in the week, when everyone else thinks they know what's good for me, I don't appreciate that. So this is there's a little nuance here. What are you saying, Mike? We actually have Joe Maddon for you. So here's the skipper on the tobacco.
Again, I'm into personal freedoms. I don't quite understand the point with all that. Just eradicate tobacco, period, if you're going to go that route. I mean, it's just, I'm not into over-legislating the human race, so for me, I'll just have to listen and learn. I stopped chewing tobacco about 15 years ago, and I'm glad that I did, because I think I feel
better. Protect your organization's confidential information.
That is Maddon until something else jumped in there. So, okay, Joe Maddon stepping up for personal liberties.
I agree with him.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't feel like you're supposed to listen. Everybody feels like they know what's good for you as a person. I think you got to be able to figure that out.
Well,
you know?
And I agree with that. Listen, you want to at home, you want to go have yourself some dip,
but it's already been into. I mean, this is something that's been going on for a long period of time in ballparks, mm-hmm. in baseball.
Well, you used to be able to smoke in the dugout. Can't do that anymore.
I mean, well. You know, I agree with what Maddon was talking about, though, but it's about change. So anytime that change comes about, you have to kind of figure out how you're going to be able to adapt to that. And I think a lot of guys, and you know as well, Carm, they're really not happy about this. You're judging what's going to be right for me. That's what they're saying right now. What? This is what they're saying. It's my life.
You ever dip?
Back in the day, yes.
Really, a little bit?
Yeah.
A little skull? What'd you go with?
In college.
College?
Yes.
Do you have a brand name that you preferred back in the day?
You know, just was one of the things where you had to go get cans for the older guys. And that's when I had no car. And like the upperclassmen, you had to go out and make sure that they had theirs. And, you know, you try it, and it's one of those things.
Jacobson, you ever do the lipper? You ever pop a dippy? Is that what they say? What's the lingo here? I need to know the lingo. Is that right? Oh, pop dip? Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what the lingo is. But no, I've tried it when I played softball a few times, but I don't like it. It wasn't my thing.
So would you say that you tried it playing softball because you saw big leaguers put it in their mouth and you thought that was cool?
I think that would be safe to say.
Right? Right?
Maybe.
Okay.
But I wouldn't even say that because I was already in high school and everybody else was dipping and just did it.
Well, yeah, would you say they were doing it because, oh, I'm in high school now and I'm on the baseball team, so I'm going to put a lipper in?
Listen, I saw guys, you know, when coming up in high school who you looked at in college football who were taking steroids to try to get stronger. And
right?
It wasn't something that I decided to try. You know?
True.
So,
but
I mean, I'm not going to sit here because I understand when you look at people and especially athletes, they are hold at a higher standard, and I get that. And a lot of these kids look up to them. So, you know, this is something as a whole that I'm all up for people having their personal freedom. But if there is a change, it's going to be something that these guys are going to have to get used to.
And listen, exactly right, and they don't have control over the rules. And
no, you have to abide by the rules, which is kind of funny that we came into that because those are the rules now that the White Sox were implementing about kids in the locker room. It might not be something that you like, but we all have bosses. When they say something and they want to change something, we don't own the company. We got to abide by the rules.
Right.
Sorry.
True.
Sorry.
And here's the other thing. Like, I mean, I am left, okay, it's when it comes to civil liberties. I mean, I think...
I know you are.
Right. I mean, I think the wacky tobacco should be legal, just like it is in Colorado, and I think we should make a whole bunch of money on it, and I think when you walk around downtown Chicago, if you want to step into a store, you should be able to do that. I don't think if you legalize other drugs, people would be like running out and be like, sweet, I'm going to go do that, because, you know, now that that's legal, that's not how I would live my life. It's the legality of it has nothing to do with whether or not I try something. However, this is Major League Baseball, and the bottom line is that people do look up to the guys on the field, right?
I get that, yeah. I get that.
So why, I think it's taken a long time to get here, but why would you allow somebody to sit out there, whatever, pitching left field, most likely a first baseman type, or even when you're just coming to the plate with a big wad of tobacco in your mouth? I mean, they might as well, if you're going to do that, they should be allowed to have a beer, put it down on the side, or you know, smoke a little butt, put that on the grass over there. I mean, it's the same thing to me. You can't, why would you allow them to do that? Like, I think they're completely right here.
And this kind of goes back to a parenting thing like you were talking about earlier. You should not be teaching your kids to look up to athletes.
Right, but at least we
all know that by
now.
Yeah,
they're going to. They're going to look up to these athletes. But as parents, it's for us to be able to teach our kids what's right and wrong. And our kids are going to make decisions like we all did growing up. Did you try it? You've tried it before, right?
I've never tried it. Okay. I was terrified of it. But listen, I had a parent that was absolutely positively telling me no, 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 no. A lot of kids don't have that. I mean, a lot of, you know,
I get it. I get what you're saying. It's just hard to look at athletes and say that you're supposed to live up to this certain standard to be able for my kids to, I'm not putting that on any athlete, any person out there to be a role model for my kid. I'm going to have to teach him and show them myself what it's all about.
3-1-2.
That's our goal as parents.
You're a good dad. That's an engaged parent. 312-981-7200. Should MLB players be allowed their tobacco? We'll do a little bit of that coming up after 4 o'clock. 720 WGN.
Holy touchdown, baby!
Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Four o'clock hour. This is The Beat with you till 6. Brian Noonan takes over then. I'm Mark Carmen.
You're Jared Payton.
Yeah, yeah.
You ready?
Spirited first hour, right? I thought it was.
I just love the fact that sitting in and getting a chance to talk with you and disagree with stuff, which is always fun.
Well, do we get to a place with tobacco here?
No, we never did.
I mean, if it was Jared Payton's decision, ban tobacco on the field with the dip or leave it alone, what would you do? Because if it's me, by the way, 7 days ago, this wasn't some issue I was thinking about. MLB, if you're just joining us, or rather Illinois, with a measure from the alderman, has gotten rid of smokeless tobacco at both Wrigley and Comiskey Park. And both of those stadiums are in the state of Illinois, right? Yes, that's how that works. Yes. And they're joining other states that have done the same, California, so San Francisco, and San Francisco and L.A. and Boston. This is a city decision, not a state decision.
No, I don't know if I'm putting the band on, but I'm with Joe Madden. I understand that things happen. You got to be able to adjust.
Well, that is the reality. But
it's the reality.
Some people have been upset about that. I think it's the more I thought about it, and you know, kids watching the game and guys out there on the field. You really need that lipper, man. If you want to go in, by the way, you want to go have a cigarette or something in the dugout, out of sight, out of mind, I'm cool with that. I don't think that needs to be an issue at all. But on the field, some baseball player with a wad of tobacco falling out of his mouth.
You always have to bring it to that.
It always is. Like there's, it's not like some neat little thing. It's always.
You know, I don't really pay attention, so.
When you think Lenny Dykstra, what do you think of?
I think of the big, huge shoe. I always do. I mean,
thank you.
But not everybody was as extreme as Dykstra was.
And bankruptcy. Lots of bankruptcy.
I was going to say that, too.
But. And crashing cars and drinking heavily and all that type of stuff.
Just a bad person.
So, all right. I think we've got some clarification. I'm on one side, you're on the other. But
we need to ban alcohol sales as well at these games.
No, we do not. We don't need to do that. I assume you're being sarcastic.
I am. Come on now. You're going to tell people. I have a hard time trying to tell somebody else what to do.
That is the other thing for the fan, right? Sitting there at the game, there are certain people that do like to like have a dip and watch the baseball game. Can't do that either. It's not just for the baseball players. Do I want to sit next to some dude with a huge wad of tobacco in his mouth and a cup and a towel and a lipper? It's nauseating. Absolutely.
This is all about. I don't know, man. It's just hard for me to think about. You know what I mean? People can just sit there and drink all day at games, and then, you know, not everybody's taking public transportation home, and people are dry. Come on, man! There's other issues as well.
Well, in theory, that person would be cut off at the ballpark.
You hope so,
right? As somebody who vended at the ballparks, I can promise you that was not always the case.
Yeah,
I think you know sometimes. You make poor decisions because you want to get a sale. One guy, by the way, who won't be doing any form of tobacco during the game and probably never even has a drink off it or very rarely, probably only does it when they win the division or beat the St. Louis Cardinals in the playoffs, is Jake Arrieta. If you remember the pictures from last October, he had tons of champagne all poured across him. Arrieta talking about spring training. This guy just turns me on. He legit, this is a reason to be excited about Cubs baseball. Here's Jake talking about his outing this past weekend and how he's feeling this spring.
Good rhythm, tempo, delivery-wise. Effort level was really low. Ball's coming out nice. Extension was really the key today, and really any day. Being able to actually get out over the front side, work the ball down in the strike zone. And there was a lot of movement. With a little effort, and that's good to see. That tells me that I was really getting extended and had some good life without having to really step on the gas and search for, you know, the movement or the late run on my sinker. All is good.
I mean, the guy's just, it's effortless for me, man. I just, you know, I got some great extension. I got movement. I'm not really even doing anything, and I'm the man.
He's already put the work in. He's putting the work in. That's why he sounds like he sounds, is because of all the work that we don't see that he puts in, from the yoga to the stretching to, not everybody does that stuff. And when you're in a zone and you feel good, it just happens. And that's what's, it's cool to hear somebody talk like that.
Right.
Listen, I listen to my dad talk like that, man, because all the work that he would put in early on in the preseason was way harder than anything that he did during the game. Like what he put himself through. So when the games came around, it was like, this is easy. I can carry the ball 30, 40 times as I have to because he put the hard work in early.
Did you, have you ever done the Pilates machine that, I don't know if you saw that.
I've seen it. I've seen it at the gym and I can't do it. I'm not flexible enough. There's no way. I would tear something. I would be out and be in rehab somewhere trying to get muscles, you know, better. He works on his body and works on his craft, and that's why we saw what we saw last year, the dominance.
I mean, this guy is dedicated.
Yes. I mean, you're right. He might not ever – well, after the Cy Young, he did have a little champagne. He probably had a little champagne after that. But other than that, I don't think he puts any alcohol in his body.
You're a guy that loves a good motivational statement.
Yeah.
Motivational saying.
Love it.
I mean, Jake Arrieta, he embodies the – what is it – failing to prepare is preparing to fail. He is the exact opposite of that.
Yes.
Doing everything that I possibly can to succeed means that I will be a success.
Question for you. When you think of Arrieta, what does 2016 look like? Because 2015 was ridiculous.
I mean,
it can't be. Is it close?
I think it is. You can't promise that he's going to, you know, win 22 games again and have an ERA, you know, closer to one than two, but it's going to be good. I mean, he was asked the same question. He's like, I don't know if I'm going to duplicate that, but I can tell you one thing. It's going to be pretty good.
As long as you have Lester helping out and doing a little bit more than 2015, he'll be all right.
Yeah. If the whole concept that what came out today with John Lester and his elbow, if you missed that story, we'll give you a little juice of that coming back here. And also, college hoops at the bottom of the hour. Joey Meyer, WGN's very own, sits alongside Dave Ennett calling Northwestern basketball. And of course, you remember him from his DePaul days. He'll be with us at 4:35. And by the way, Mike Jacobson, with Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, you can relive the best moments of the game anytime you want. Start your 30-day trial at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. What was that, sir?
I was going to say you should remind everybody that Notre Dame barely got by Stephen F. Austin.
Notre Dame barely got by
76-75.
Oh, Stephen F., that's just one person? No? Oh, okay. It's a team. My bad.
Where is Stephen F. Austin? Anybody know?
No clue.
I'd have to look that one up, too.
Stephen F. Austin is in, I believe...
Is it Texas?
It's definitely in Texas, and I wanted to say Austin, Texas, but then I kind of just doubled myself. Didn't want to go out on that limb, but yes. I think I'm correct. Stephen F. Austin, Austin, Texas. There's like seven colleges in Austin, Texas, in addition to UT. One of those colleges, by the way, is St. Edward's University, where an incredible play-by-play talent was calling games from 2005 to 2007. When they won three conference championships.
Who was that?
That would be me. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, right.
That was me. Would you like to hear some audio from it? I got a whole demo tape for you.
No. Well, maybe when we go to break.
Okay, we'll do it off the air. Coming right back, 720 WGN.
It's been fun to watch. These guys are far beyond where they're supposed to be, and that speaks volumes for what Theo's done, what Tom's done to get these guys in here that are mentally and physically prepared for these situations, and it's been fun to watch them grow. They get better and better every day.
John Lester, Chicago Cub, a left-hander. That was after the NLCS last year. After the DS, rather, I'm sorry. DS, heading into that NLCS after the Cubs beat the St. Louis Cardinals, which honestly, I still can't believe that happened. They beat the St. Louis Cardinals in the playoffs? Did that really happen? Honestly. I'm Mark Carmen, you're Jared Payton. It's The Beat. We're here till 6 o'clock tomorrow. And Jared, if you don't get enough of him today, you can hear him tomorrow morning on the Steve Cochran Show. What time is that at again?
8:20.
So get your dancing shoes on.
Can't wait.
A little tomorrow morning. So John Lester, the reason why we're bringing this up, John Lester, he of the $155 million contract signed last year by the Cubs, it was revealed today he's got a bone chip in his pitching elbow. Let that sink in for a minute. Bone chip, pitching elbow.
Doesn't sound good.
Cub fans right now, you perhaps are driving into a tree. This bone chip was discovered 2014. Okay, MRI in 2014. So the Cubs, this is a, by the way, this is from a report from Yahoo Sports, just so we're all clear here. And Lester's not denying it. He's calling the chip, quote, a non-issue. He's told that to the Sun-Times. And last year, I mean, 205 innings and, you know, 14 in the postseason. So he was healthy. And he's not an overpowering pitcher. I mean, he's more crafty than anything else. I mean, he's pitched like he's always pitched. His quote is, "It's just a matter of hopefully it stays put. We don't have to worry about it. And then if it becomes a concern, if I start having inflammation or missing starts because of it, then that's when we'll probably sit down and talk to somebody about getting it removed. As of now, knock on wood, I haven't had any concern." And then here's Theo. "Theo, we did a very thorough exam, including the image of the shoulder and the elbow. We were really quite pleased with the results, as John compared very favorably with most of the free agent pitchers we've examined and MRI'd over many years." And he continues, "Virtually all pitchers have some wear and tear on their shoulders, elbows, and John's imperfections are very manageable. He remains very consistent, as we hoped, throwing 200-plus innings again last season."
It's a non-issue right now.
Could be occurrence, Lou Piniella something. Bone chip in the elbow. Bone chip in the elbow, and you signed him to a six-year deal with $155 million?
It was discovered in 2014.
Okay, but like last year was...
I'm with you. No, look, I'm with you, not against you.
Okay.
This is... I mean, you did your homework, and I mean, that's just... It's a lot of money when you start just thinking about it, man. But you never know when something is going to go wrong, but... In the grand scheme of things, though, Carm, isn't that just sports in general, though? You know, you could go out any day and, you know.
In the grand scheme of things.
Okay, you're not going to go buy a car that has, like.
Right.
Yeah. You're not going to go spend, you know, $100,000 on a car without, like, getting the Carfax.
I mean, call me crazy, but, you know, I know they needed pitching and they wanted to make a splash and they wanted to make a statement that, hey, we're no longer playing around. We're going after the primetime talent. And listen, they got to the NLCS last year and they won a playoff series for only the second time in my life. Yours too, and everybody else's for that matter, unless you're 100 and or whatever, gazillion years old, basically. And it worked out. But would I have signed a guy to a six-year deal for $155 million if I knew he had a bone chip in his elbow? No, I wouldn't have done it. I mean, even if I had all the doctors tell me it's going to be fine, it's going to be fine, it's going to be fine. That's a big-time investment, man.
It's a huge investment. I mean, if you checked the Carfax and you felt everything was good, listen, man, let me tell you something.
By the way, Joe Maddon says he's watched him throw in this camp and that he's throwing the ball as well as I've ever seen him. His delivery is as good as I've seen him. His arm stroke is beautiful.
I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
Because it kind of goes with this. Back in the day, 2004, after I got my first contract with Tennessee, I didn't buy a house. I bought a car. I got a car from Michael Jordan, all right?
You bought a car from Michael Jordan?
Yeah, bought Michael Jordan 760 BMW. I should have lived in that. How much did I pay for it?
Wait a second, that's so cool. How did you get to Jordan's Beamer?
Listen, he heard through a friend at a BMW dealership that I was looking for a 750, and he had the 60. He was trying to get rid of it, so I purchased it. All right. Let me tell you. Now, listen, got into a bad car accident. Lady hit me, right?
Oh,
still Michael Jordan's car. Everybody knew it. And when I went to go take it back because I wanted to get something else, and they looked at the Carfax and went through and they're like, has it been any damage to it? Yeah, just a little bit. They came back and what they gave me for it wasn't even close to even what I bought it for, even because it was his car. You got to check. Listen, everybody's checking the Carfax, man. If it's not right,
live life on a totally different level than me and Mark Carmen do. This is just too much. Michael Jordan's car?
We got from Lester's bone chip elbow to JP buying MJ's Beamer.
It was the Carfax.
And there was a Carfax.
It's the Carfax. You got to check it. And the Cubs felt like it was good enough that they could move on and give him that money. But listen, the dealership wasn't, they weren't offering me anymore just because of that. They looked and checked it out. Didn't pass inspection. Sorry.
I
didn't mean to take you to a whole
No. I'm super jealous. You had MJ's, you're buying MJ's car. I did go to, you know, when Michael didn't live behind the gate.
Yeah.
He had a normal house on a normal street. Granted, it was in the northern suburbs, which is a privileged area where growing up in Highland Park, but it was a normal, relatively. You could walk right up to Michael's, which I did on Halloween, and he gave you a car. You know, everyone's giving out candies. He's giving out a stack of free Big Mac, free Big Mac, free Big Mac, courtesy of Mike. Just go to McDonald's, get a free Big Mac, courtesy of MJ. That was Halloween. You bought the Beamer. I got a Big Mac, but we're kind of on the same page.
Pretty much. I had a Big Mac in the car at one point, so.
Love a good Big Mac. All right, Joey Meyer will be talking all things NCAA tournament, and JP's got a special thing he wants to ask him about as well. That's right after the 4:30 news, 720 WGN. This is The Beat. I'm Mark Harmon. He is Jared Payton. Happy Sunday to you. Hope you're enjoying it. We are with you tonight till 6 o'clock, about to bring in the head coach and your Northwestern color commentator alongside the great Dave Ennett, Joey Meyer. Just a quick update on what's going on in the tournament to augment Mike Jacobson's sports report. Oklahoma now 21-11 over VCU. That is the two-seed Sooners. And coming up at 5:10 tonight, Syracuse, Middle Tennessee State, and Maryland and Hawaii at 6:10. Texas A&M, Northern Iowa at 6:40. Wisconsin, Xavier, 7:40. And the late one tonight, Oregon and St. Joe's. Joey Meyer knows who's going to win every single one of those games. And that's why he's joining us now on 720 WGN. Coach!
I have a theory on this. The more you know, the worse you do in these brackets.
Well, did you?
How's that for an excuse?
Did you have Indiana in your Sweet 16? You saw them play a bunch this year. Or at least some.
No, I did not. I actually thought Kentucky would beat him because of guard play, although Yogi Ferrell's really good. And I thought Indiana did a really good job on Murray. That OG, well, I can't say how to say his last name, that's a heck of a freshman. I was really impressed with Indiana's defense. They were better. They're getting better and better as the year's gone on defensively, and they deserve to win.
Joey, you look at this tournament, and my alma mater is sitting there and with a 3 seed, the Miami Hurricanes. How good are they, and do you see them beating Nova?
You know, let's go by my bracket picks. Yes, I do. I think they're – I mean, obviously, Villanova played really well today. That's the best I've seen Villanova play. I think Miami's size and the fact that Rodriguez is such a good point guard – I think Miami has a little bit of an edge, but I'll tell you this, you know, you could toss this one up a little bit. I think if Villanova shoots the ball really well like they did today, they'll win. If they don't, I think Miami will win.
You know what? One of the teams that I enjoy, Joey, is Gonzaga, and it's basically because Mark Few, from what I understand, and maybe you can confirm this, most college basketball coaches, maybe yourself included, you guys are insane, and you work from 6 in the morning till midnight, you sleep 3 hours, then you come back and you do it again. I think Mark actually goes normal lifestyle as much as possible. I think they get in the office, it's his rule, at 8, and they have to leave at 6. Like, if you want to be all coach all the time, you don't go work at Gonzaga for him. I don't think he has much turnover on his staff anyway, but like they go about it that way. And they're always there. I mean, it's, you know, Gonzaga, a school that you wouldn't think would be a perennial NCAA, I don't want to say contender, but certainly always in the tournament. What do you see with them as to how they've been able to build this success, sustain it?
Well, one, I think coaches exaggerate just a little bit. I think they like that image that they're always in the office. Nah, come on. I do think recruiting takes up a lot of your time, but you can do that when you go home at night and stuff. So I think they over-exaggerate a little bit. And if they are working that hard, they're not very bright because that's just too much. You get overtired. You don't think straight. So I used to tell my assistants, I had two great ones in Molinari and Platt. I just tell them, get out of here. You know, I don't think you work as well when you work that long. But anyway, getting back, because he does a great job, and they have a great tradition. I think tradition means a lot, and they have a great tradition. This year they struggled because they lost the guards, and they weren't as good at guard. Guard play wasn't very good. They have the bigs, but now when the guards are playing as well as they are, and they have Sabonis and Wilshere, that's a really good team now. That's one of those teams you're like, you don't want to play them right now. They are playing really well.
Well, I know a team that kind of took my bracket and made me just rip all of them. I had 4 of them, and that was Middle Tennessee State, who ended up beating Michigan State, who I had going all the way in all my brackets, which I know Coach, you probably talked to me saying, change it up just a little bit. But they're going up against next up against a Syracuse squad that a lot of people don't give a lot of love to or love to be in the tournament. And can they get past Syracuse?
If they played like they did against Michigan State, yes. I mean, they were the better team against Michigan State. That's what was scary about it. I didn't think Michigan State could not stop them. Yep. I mean, I think they were bad offensively, but Michigan State could not stop Middle Tennessee. They played a great, and that's the first time I've ever seen them. If they're that good and they play like that, yeah, they can get by Syracuse. Syracuse zone is not quite as good as it's been in years past. They're not quite as long as they've been. But it is a tough thing to prepare for in one day. You haven't seen that zone. That can present some problems. So this is another one that, you know, it could go either way.
Familiar voice you're hearing right now, Joey Meyer, the head coach and color commentator, of course, for Northwestern basketball alongside Dave Annett. Joey, what did you think about the Cats' decision to not play any postseason tournaments?
You know, just talking to them on the road, you know, they started the year so early going over Europe and the season I think was long. They would have gone to the NIT if they had been invited. But I think it's a smart decision. I think their team mentally and physically was a little worn out. I don't know if those postseason tournaments have the brand name that make it worthwhile. I know what the positive is in going there. You get more experience, you get more games, but it just seems like that team was a little banged up, a little tired, and I think Chris and I think made an intelligent decision.
Yeah, I mean it's got to be rough to be able to. It's a lot.
Joey was in the middle of the deal though. He had a trip to Vegas. He already had his Speedo and his different looks. They were all lined up in the Meyer household.
Why don't you tell my secrets?
You
have to give away my secrets. I told you that in confidence, but I had my gambling money ready, my $20, and when I lose that, I quit. I was all set for the trip. I don't even know who was invited to that tournament, so I guess the brand name isn't that good.
Joey, I look at I told you about being a Miami Hurricane, but I'm a true Duke fan. I've been a Duke fan all my life. It's kind of crazy how since I've been a little kid and watching last year, I went to the national championship game in Indy. A totally different team this year when you look at some of these youngsters. But Duke over Yale, to me yesterday, watching them play in that first half against Yale, defense and hitting threes, when they can do that, they're a pretty scary team. But they get off on rebounds, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They don't have enough bigs. I don't see them getting a chance to be able to go up against maybe Oregon, who I think is going to go next against the Ducks, if they have a chance to play them in the next round.
You know, I think Coach K had the best description of his team. We're like a house on a hill hoping it doesn't rain. You know, they're in a precarious position. They don't have enough depth. They depend on the three-point shot. They can't deal with foul trouble. They're not a real good defensive team, but they got some individual players that are really skilled. Brandon Ingram, he's unbelievably talented. And Grayson Allen can score. I mean, they got scorers. They don't have size. They don't have depth. But they got a pretty good guy on the bench there. And he seems to be able to find some ways to win games. But, you know, you worry, can they defend? Can they rebound? Can they stay out of foul trouble? Yeah, they just got to hope it doesn't rain.
Joey, what do you think about, you know, you got 15 seeds winning games in Middle Tennessee. You've got 14 seeds in Stephen F. Austin, who were nearly in the Sweet 16. I mean, this has been going on for years, too. 13 seeds have been winning every year, I think, now for four straight years. 12s beat 5s more than 5s beat 12s. What do you make of all that, if anything?
Well, one, parity is the word everybody uses. There are a lot of good players, and if you look at rosters, you're going to see a lot of guys at those schools that have transferred that just weren't in the right spot at the right time. I think the other thing is, and I've been involved with this in a lot when I was coaching, when you're the higher seed, it's you play a little tighter, you're a little more nervous. When you're a lower seed, you try a few more things, you're a little more relaxed, and when the talent gap isn't that much different, it depends. And I think the other thing that hits is a three-point shot. You know, with the three-point shot, you hit, you know, you're out of the game, you're being outplayed. It's a 12-point game, you hit three threes, and all of a sudden all the pressure's comes right back to the higher seed. They get a little tight, miss a few free throws, and the lower seed wins. So there's a lot of ways that lower seeds can win. It just happens, and really, if it doesn't happen, that's the unexpected.
Who now, when you look at how the brackets have been just busted up, everybody's bracket being thrown all over the place and all these upsets, it's been kind of crazy. Who do you like left to be that team to kind of take this whole thing and be hoisting that trophy?
Well, I picked Kansas before the tournament. I think they have the best talent. They got one heck of a coach. They're going 5-6 deep in the post, so they can withstand the foul trouble in the inside. They can run guys at you. I think they have the best chance. I think, and the second best chance, I think, is North Carolina. I think North Carolina has just a wealth of athletes. They got guard play. I mean, I think those two, in my mind, would be the favorites. I just don't have a great feel for Oregon. I've only seen them play once. I know they can score the ball. I know they change defenses. I don't know if they're big and strong enough. I just don't have a great feel for them. The other team I kind of have liked early, and I picked to go to the Final Four, was Texas A&M, just because they're really physical. They're well disciplined. They defend. I think they have a shot too. So it'll be answered. But the top two in my mind, which probably means they'll lose their next game, but Kansas and North Carolina.
Go back for just 1 second, Joey. Your favorite moment in the NCAA tournament, head coach, assistant coach. What's that moment where you're like, you know, laying there in the bed at night thinking back in the day? What pops in?
I have two, and I'll make them quick.
Take all day. I could sit back and listen to this for hours. But go ahead.
UCLA game. We get to the Final Four by beating a UCLA team that had Greenwood and Hamilton. I mean, so much more talent. We just got a lead. Mabel Helon coaches one and only Final Four. I mean, that one was unbelievable. And then when I was a head coach, we were down 5 with 45 seconds to go, and St. John's had the ball. And somehow, some way, we ended up tying it and win it in overtime to go to the Sweet 16. So those two will always be my two favorite moments. And seeing Coach Ray going to the Final Four was just unbelievable.
Was the second one Rod Strickland? Am I right about that or am I wrong?
We had Strickland when we beat St. John's. Dallas Comegys missed a free throw on purpose. And fortunately for us, the refs weren't real alert, because you can't lead cross over the free throw line before the ball hits the rim, and he did, and tipped it to Rod, with Edwards, and Edwards passed to Strickland. Strickland scored to tie it up. And you know who missed the shot for St. John's that could have won it for him was Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson.
Ooh. Yeah, Mark Jackson had a floater in the lane at the buzzer that I thought was going in. Unfortunately, it didn't go in, but it was Mark Jackson that had the shot.
That's kind of fitting to look back on, because he has so much hate for the Bulls and Michael and all that, that it's good that DePaul got him before that even happened. Like, that probably adds on to his Chicago angst. Joey, great stuff. We'll check in with you next week, and if you have the time, we'll take a look at the old Final Four coming down the pipe.
I'm going to tell you real quick what I'm doing now. What I do is I sit my son's house or apartment. He has two big screen TVs. He brings one in from the bedroom, then puts his computer on the table. I put my feet up from 11 in the morning till whatever, 11:30 at night, and watch 3 basketball games all day. So you know I'm a sick person, and I enjoy the heck out of it.
You're the best, man.
That's how you're supposed to live life in March.
Yeah, it's a must.
Is your son cooking food over there too for you? I mean, how's that work?
No, we don't go that far. I bring my food from home, you know, a yogurt and a bagel or whatever, something to warm up in the microwave. Now, he figures he provides the 3 TVs. He doesn't need to provide anything else.
That's a son taught well right there by Pops. Joey, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, man. Talk to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Joey Meyer, sitting there eating bagels, yogurt, watching College Hoop.
Hope that's what my son does. 3 TVs. Gotta love that.
Your son's going to have it all going on.
I hope so.
In every switch way. All right, we got to take a quick timeout. There is breaking tennis news.
Come on, man.
Breaking tennis. It involves Serena. It's actually, I think you're going to like it. Straight ahead, 720 WGN. This is
my kingdom come. This is now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
In the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to delve more into JP's dancing.
Please don't.
No, we got to do it. you're a champion. That doesn't happen very often on this show.
It's the last trophy that I'm ever going to win.
Don't say that. You never know what's in your future.
You never know.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about. All right, I mentioned there's breaking news.
Yes. Tell me, it's got to be something. Is it Bears? Is it Cubs? Sox? What is it?
So there's a great tennis tournament going on right now, JP.
Hold on. The breaking news is tennis?
Yeah. Yes, you're a tennis guy. We've talked about this. You actually, you know, you had the tennis court at your house growing up. You know, Pops got you out there. You kind of actually like the sport.
I do, but I didn't know that they really had breaking news in tennis.
Well, okay, I might be overstating it slightly.
All right.
But, you know, not terribly. So the BNP Paribas, the Indian Wells tournament's going on right now. You see, you feel me?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never been, but I'm really... It's on the bucket list to get out there. I think the Deacon, Jimmy DeCastro.
Should send you.
Yeah. And Novak Djokovic won the men's tournaments. He beat Milos Raonic 6-2, 6-0. Nadal in the semis was very competitive with him. This is not the breaking news. And so Victoria Azarenka beat Serena in the semis 6-4, 6-4. Or rather... in the finals to win the tournament. Thank you very much. So Vicky over Serena, 6-4 and 6-4. But when she's on the court, Serena, the head of the tournament, CEO Raymond Moore, talked about, he said, quote, "If I was a lady player, I would go down every night on my knees and thank God Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal were born. They have carried the sport." Okay, that's what he said. Now, a reporter asked Serena the question. This is what he said. "What's your reaction to that comment?" Now, this is the CEO of Indian Wells, which is a major tournament. And by the way, it's a tournament that Serena Williams, when she was 17, 18 years old, she boycotted it because of racial undertones and stuff. And she's come back to this tournament now playing it for... This is the second year in a row she's played it. And it was a big deal for her to return. Like, she was very emotional about it last year. So here's Serena's comment. "Well, I don't understand why I always have to answer questions about controversy like this." And she starts laughing, you know, nervously. "Obviously, I don't think any woman should be down on their knees thanking anybody like that." And then she continues on. "I think Venus, myself, a number of players have been... If I could tell you every day how many people say they don't watch tennis unless they're watching myself or my sister, I couldn't even bring up that number. So I don't think that's a very accurate statement." She's saying that she's carrying the game more than the men. "I think there's a lot of women out there who are more," and then she stops herself, "are very exciting to watch. I think there are a lot of men out there who are exciting to watch. I think it definitely goes both ways. I think those remarks are very much mistaken and very, very, very inaccurate." To the casual sports fan, the reason why I'm bringing up...
You don't want to hear what I have to say.
Yeah, I do.
If I'm watching the sport...
Yeah.
From a guy who doesn't watch the sport, who doesn't, you know, follow it at all, I watch when she's doing something. When she's in a tournament or she's about to win something, that's when I turn it on. She is the reason why I watch tennis. So, the men are great, but come on, you know this. It's not the same as back in the day, man.
It's one of the most ignorant statements that somebody around tennis has ever made.
Ever made, yes. First of all, we should talk about those statements first. She's the reason why I watch tennis.
Right, and for the casual fan, they're more apt to watch the women.
Are you going to sit here and tell me that you're a tennis guy, you don't think... she's been helping carry the sport, not by herself, but she has been a big part of that.
No question. News at 5, Adam Hoge, right after that, 720 WGN.
Hey, Adam Hoge.
Hi.
Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Bear Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
That's our guy. Best intro that we have on the show.
Adam Hoge. My man.
Adam Hoge joining his own show as the NFL owners' meetings are taking place in Boca Raton, Florida. So you get to hang out with some older people, I would assume, and then go to the owners' meetings. This is perfect for you, Adam.
I think it is. I have not seen John Fox yet, but I'm sure he's eagerly awaiting my face and my questioning.
Doesn't he have a condo in Boca, Grandpa Fox?
He has a place in Marco Island on the other side, on the Gulf side of Florida. We are on the Atlantic side, just north of Fort Lauderdale.
I love Boca.
I love Boca. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Florida, so I know you're enjoying and soaking up the sun. But when you look at the owners' meetings, one of the biggest things is some of these different rules changes that could be happening. And probably the biggest one is that penalized twice in the same game and being ejected, right?
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. Actually, I spent the flight down here today going through a very long document of all the same document that the owners and everyone involved, the committees tonight, that this is all the stuff they're going to be looking at and going over. And they had a conference call a few days ago to kind of prepare for this. That now they take this in tonight to these meetings, and they start to discuss each one. They show videotape. Dean Blandino, the head of officiating, is there. They go through each and every one of these and kind of discuss the pros and cons of these rule changes, and then there'll be a vote. And tomorrow there'll be a press conference to kind of go through what they've decided. So I think that's the one that's getting the most headlines right now, the idea that you can get disqualified if you are penalized twice in the same game for unsportsmanlike conduct fouls. Now, it's clear, we got to be clear that it's unsportsmanlike conduct, because Roger Goodell at the Super Bowl mentioned personal fouls, which is a much vaguer and expansive list of penalties. So to be clear, this is not like you commit two face masks in a game, you're going to get kicked out. This has been narrowed down over the last couple of months to just unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, like taunting, or throwing a punch or something like that. And officials are still going to have the authority to throw you out after one act of aggression if they feel like it's necessary. But if you get two, you're automatically disqualified. And it's not for sure. This is what they're going to be voting on.
All right. So, I mean, it seems it's a big deal. But another one, I think, and I'm not sure, and I know you're there, but what about the catch, no catch? Because that was this season, it seems like that came up on Twitter, people talking about it all the time, about, especially looking back at that Dez Bryant catch against the Packers. That play, and I looked at it frame by frame over and over again, they got to figure out what's a catch and what's not a catch, right?
I think so, except amazingly, guys, they're not going to make any changes this year. It's not even something that is going to be, it might be discussed here, but it's not there's no new rule proposals with this. They're not going to be making any changes this week. We're going into next season with the same exact rule, which it seems like no one understands. And I read the transcript from the conference call the other day, that the NFL had, and they went through this and discuss why they're not making changes. And basically the NFL is standing by the fact that they believe this rule makes perfect sense and is clear, and they just need to educate people better.
Adam Hogue,
I can't believe that, because I've been going through this. I've spent so much time going through this rule and understanding it, and I still think that it's not being applied properly by the officials on the field on Sundays.
Pretty amazing. We've been playing football for, I don't know how many years, 100, and we can't figure out what's the catch. Adam Hogue down in Florida at the owners' meetings, beautiful Boca Raton. What about the touchback, Hoagie, moving from the 20 to the 25-yard line if you down the ball in the end zone? Is that happening? Do you think are you in favor?
I don't mind it. I think that it's probably something that's going to get passed here, or at least experimented with for 1 year. So they're going to, on kickoffs, if you take a touchback, the ball's going to be at the 25. Now on punts, it'll still go to the 20. But the idea here is sort of the NFL admitting that the kick coverage and kick returns are one of the more dangerous plays in the game of football right now. When you have guys running full speed that far down the field, gathering that much extra momentum and running into each other all across the field, it is a dangerous play. So I think what this rule is going to do is encourage returners, if you catch the ball deep, in the end zone, don't take it out. Just take a knee, start at the 25. This is a player safety rule. Let's be clear. College football has gone to this, and I think it's been pretty successful in college. I think that's what the NFL thinks right now. And so it will not surprise me if this is something that is passed in the next day here. Let me give you a couple other ones real quick.
Sure.
They're talking about making all chop blocks illegal, which is also a player safety rule. If you look at this rule right now and the chop blocks and what can and not be called, it's unbelievable. I don't know how I have all the sympathy in the world for officials. It's impossible for them in a split second when they see one of these things to go through what is basically a list of 20 different requirements now in their head and decide if it's a chop block. So I think this is the right call to just eliminate it altogether. Also, there could be changes with instant replay and how many challenges teams get. There are two different rule proposals out there, one by Baltimore, which is just give us three challenges now instead of two. There's another one by Minnesota, which I prefer this, and it'll still be two, but instead of having to get both challenges right in order to get a third, which is how it is right now, if you just get one challenge right, you'll get a third. And I think that's fair. I think if you challenge something that was a bad call by the officials and they correct it and you were right about that challenge, then you shouldn't lose a challenge. You should get another one. And so we'll see where that goes in the next day, because there are a couple different proposals in terms of challenges and instant replay.
First question you're going to ask Ryan Pace, Bears general manager, is expected to talk.
Well, I want to know what the plan is on offense here to replace some production. I mean, you look at trading Martellus Bennett, letting Matt Forte go, and last year you traded Brandon Marshall. And I think if you look at each one of those on a case-by-case basis, you can understand why the move or decision to move on was made. But there's still a heck of a lot of production here to fill, right? So what's the plan here? What are they thinking? Who in-house are they expecting to replace that production? I mean, I think we know the names. Jeremy Lankford and Kevin White are going to have to step up here. But is that too much pressure to put on a couple young guys, including one in Kevin White, who's still yet to set foot on an NFL field?
Adam, we'll be reading you all week, WGNRadio.com/sports, and then Adam Hoag's Bears blog. That should be on. You should bookmark that and do more with it. Read him. Good stuff, I'm sure, coming out this week with Ryan and different rule changes. Appreciate you joining your own show, sir.
All right, I'm going to go try to find Michael Jordan and buy his car.
Funny.
That was unbelievable. Ogie, you're the best. See you, brother.
See you guys.
There you go, Adam Hogue, who was listening to the show, and you buying Michael Jordan's car.
I didn't think he would. I thought he'd probably be on the beach somewhere. He's hanging out, listening to his own show.
More in the great Jared Payne's life, by the way, coming back here.
Oh, man. Let's do it.
Sitting next to a champion right here on 720 WGN. You're sampling the best. Yeah, buddy. Champion on the show. You just heard the spot. Arthur Murray, Dan Center. My man doing work.
I had to. I had to represent for
it's the Beat, 720 WGN, with you for another 37-odd minutes here till 6 o'clock. Jarrett's actually got to take off after the 5:30 news and go get ready for his TV show tonight, 6 o'clock, CLTV.
Upstairs, man. I get to stay here at the tower and do my TV show.
It's a beautiful thing. We love it. It's phenomenal to see you.
Thank you for coming on the show so many times. I mean, you've been on and filled in, and I just appreciate you coming on because you're probably one of my favorite guests.
I thank you for saying that. I always appreciate the getting the call and coming in and helping out when I can. It's most definitely my pleasure. All right. More importantly, you are a champion. Now, you danced with a professional dancer, right? Her name was Amy?
Her name was Amy, yes. And it just kind of all worked out that way. When I decided to jump into this, radio asked me if I wanted to do it. I said, yeah, why not? And got a chance to go and show off my dance skills.
How many practices did you and Amy partake in?
Nine for I think the routine was about a minute and 30 seconds. But it was a lot of dancing. But it's all, you know, you start to think about it, and I think about how these guys do Dancing with the Stars, right? And mm-hmm. the athletes, you see them winning it all the time. Man, we know muscle, we have muscle memory, man. It's just a part of, you know, following directions like we always do playing sports, and it became easy. And next thing you know, we were doing, I flipped her in the routine, and
you know, you did.
Yeah, I mean, I had to go all out to win, and I wasn't losing. And everybody was like, why are you so cocky? I'm not that I'm cocky. I just knew how much we put into our routine that I wasn't worried about anybody else. And, you know, I really wanted to beat Cheryl Scott. So.
And you did.
Yeah, she knew. She could dance. And I give her credit. She can dance. We all had a great time. But the biggest part was raising the money that we raised for breast cancer awareness here in Illinois and Chicagoland area. And to raise $250,000 is a great. It's great.
So, okay, I think you can motivate all of us right now because I'd like to be a good dancer. I'd like to be able to, you know, there's a certain studliness to a dude who can walk out there, be with your wife, your girlfriend, whoever. You know, have that presence on the dance floor. Know what you're doing.
Yeah.
How long does that take? Did you know what you were doing going into it?
Yeah, I knew I was going. I participated in an event for a friend of mine back in the day who needed a dance partner while I was in junior high school. So I had to wear hammer pants back in those days, though. This is when hammer pants were in. And there's actually a video out there that surfaced somewhere where I was doing a round-off flip-flop, and the tie that was around my pants ended up falling down. And, my hammer pants fell down in the middle of the routine. Yes.
Were you commando?
No, I was wearing boxers.
Okay, so you're all right.
Yeah, I was boxers. Still a little bit for a middle school kid. It was terrifying.
Yeah, not most definitely not ideal. I got more questions, but Mike and Byron wants to go old school with you right now on 720 WGN. What's up, Mike?
Tom, JP, I was wondering if these dance moves you're doing now, is there anything similar like what your dad did on Soul Train back in the day?
You know what, Mike? A little bit. I threw in a little bit of doing a little bit of the break dance and a little bit. My dad, he had the cutoff shirt on when it was in Soul Train, and those were the good old days watching him do that.
That was a riot, dude. I remember like it was yesterday. So good luck in your dancing, bud.
Thank you, man.
Mike and Byron giving JP the love.
Hey, I'm cool with that. You know what?
That's awesome.
I'm gonna keep dancing.
I'm going home tonight. YouTubing. Is it on YouTube?
No, not on YouTube. It's on my Facebook page though.
Is your dad Soul Train on YouTube?
Yes, that's on. You'll be able to find that.
Okay, I'll hit that one up then. So you did 9 practices. You had a 90-second routine. I mean, what's the likelihood that a guy like myself who could pull something even remotely? I mean, how long would it take me to become competent? Like, if I'm going to sign up at Arthur Murray, how long would it take?
I would say make sure that you're doing an hour session because it takes a little bit of time. You know, you get there, you stretch out, and then you about 45 minutes into it, just stay focused. Ladies love that you can dance, man. Guys need to understand that if you can dance, the ladies love that. My wife, man, she looked at me. She was like, "Yeah, I see with those dance moves."
Well, and that's a question right there because I feel like some wives would not be as supportive as that. You know, you're got hands all over people. You're flipping people. That could be a little sensitive topic. Moment.
No, you just when you've been married for 7 years, man, it's all good. Man,
okay,
you know.
Okay.
The love and the trust is there.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, have a great show tonight, JP, and congratulations.
Thank you, man.
You lifted us all up.
Thank you. You're the best.
We'll see you next Sunday.
All right.
Learn how real Chicagoans live, the day-to-day struggles and successes with health, fitness, and food. Watch Living Healthy Chicago Sundays at 11:30 a.m. on WGN-TV. News is coming up in 2 minutes.
Kendrick Nunn pleaded not guilty in court this afternoon. He's the second U of I basketball player to face domestic battery charges this week.
Today, Kendrick Nunn stands here 100% not guilty of any crime because no one has shown any evidence to a jury or to a judge or any other trier of fact that would tend to show he committed a crime.
Oh, it's been quite a month for Illinois. I suppose you get props for the Lovie Smith hiring, even though I kind of have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for Bill Cupid and Qubit, rather Cupid. Qubit, thank you. It wasn't even long enough here long enough for me to learn his name properly. C-U-B-I-T and the assistants that came over. So this is a little story that we haven't touched on over the weekend. So you've got four Illinois players, basketball players, arrested this year, and two recently in the last 2 weeks. One this week. One was guard Jalen Tate, and that soundbite was Kendrick Nunn. All right, he's 20 years old, Kendrick Nunn, right? And both these guys, Nunn and Tate, they were teammates at Chicago Simeon for two seasons. They won a pair of Class 4A state championships together in 2012 and 13. They won 39 games and lost four. And Nunn was also on Simeon's 2010 and 2011 4A title teams. They won a ton of games. And then he goes down to Illinois. And he joins the club, the fourth arrested Illinois basketball player. He's arrested for, one was domestic, Tate was arrested, for domestic violence, none for domestic battery. And at some point, you would think that the new athletic director, Josh Whitman, would look at the basketball coach, John Gross, who he's already given the old thumbs up, we're not getting rid of him, but you know, the leadership does matter here, and if it's one guy after another, it's just, it's embarrassing. And you can't control young people's actions, but you can make things pretty rough on them, right? And when you have one incident after another incident after another incident and a fourth incident, I mean, what's the conversation's been like in that locker room, right? Hey, if any of you got, I mean, come on. So, and the same thing with Kendrick Nunn, suspended indefinitely from the team, and they both have hired the same Urbana attorney, Evan Bruno. Just really, if it's me, I'm looking at the head coach. And I'm like, dude, I don't know who you're recruiting here, and I don't know how you're coaching him. But whatever you're doing, it's not good enough. So, little advice from good old WGN, yours truly, Mark Hartman. Let me make that just me. Those are my comments and my comments only. On a much more lighter, positive note, not necessarily lighter, actually, but a way that you can contribute and make the world a better place. The Blackhawks in the Wild, as you've heard in the sports updates all day today, we got hockey at the United Center tonight, 7 o'clock. Judd's got the pregame, and then 7:30 puck drop, John Weideman, Troy Murray. Hawks and the Minnesota Wild, which, you know, is an important game, but it's even more important because tonight is an opportunity to raise money for Matt Olson, who's he's a Minnesota native, and he had a severe spinal cord injury playing junior hockey. He was playing for the Chicago Cougars. So both the Wild and the Blackhawks and WGN Radio, WGN TV, Comcast Sportsnet Chicago, and then a couple stations up in Minnesota as well, 100.3 KFAN and Fox Sports North. Everybody is combining to try and raise money for the care of Matt Olson. And you can go to ChicagoBlackhawks.com/MO3, and there's some super cool items that you can bid on. So not only can you donate money, but you can get some amazing stuff on it. So for Blackhawk fans, right now you can bid on Blackhawks player for a day, so you get to hang out with a Blackhawk. The current bid on that is $1,000. There's one bid. There are six bids on the Blackhawks Convention VIP package. You get all sorts of contact with the players and special stuff at the convention July 15th through the 17th. Six bids on that. Current bid's $1,250. So if you have some disposable income and you're a huge fan of the Hawks and you'd like to help out a family who's trying to help out a son, Matt Olson, who had a tragic injury and, you know, he's going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, this is an opportunity to do it. There's also a Blackhawks tickets and a post-game locker room tour, a meet and greet. That's at $1,400. It's got seven bids on it. There's a road trip with the Blackhawks. You get to go on the road, go to a game, travel on the plane. I mean, that's maybe the coolest thing I've ever heard. Need some serious money for that one. But hey, if you're a wealthy person, you'd like to give back, $2,700 is the current bid. And then there's dinner with a Blackhawk, Dennis Savard. Get to hang out with Savvy, and then you get tickets to a home game. So you go to dinner, you sit with Savvy, you talk Blackhawk hockey, then you go to the game, and that's sitting at $1,100. And this is all to raise money for Matt Olson. So, and hey, if anybody from Minnesota is listening, you can go to wild.com/MO3, Matt Olson, MO3. And you can, there's a bunch of Wild items as available as well, similar to the stuff the Blackhawks are doing. They got Wild player for a day, Wild youth hockey player appearance package, take home chef, travel with the Wild, all sorts of stuff available for you. So I wanted to give that out. And once again, Blackhawks hockey coming up a little bit later tonight, the Blackhawks and the Minnesota Wild. Brian Noonan is coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. And the biggest story of the day, the biggest story of the week, of course, has been Adam LaRoche. And if you are just joining the program, we started with this. There was a statement released from Jerry Reinsdorf, the White Sox chairman. And I'm not going to read the whole thing again because that's how we started with, but I'll just give you a little snippet here. Jerry Reinsdorf: I've taken the past few days to personally meet with everyone involved, including Adam LaRoche, the front office, uniform staff, some of our active players. And he continues saying he's got nothing but the greatest regard for Adam and that his respect has grown for LaRoche during this process. And he applauds his desire to spend more time with his family. And then he continues to rave about Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn and Robin Ventura and how this is going to bring the White Sox together closer. And then he implores everybody in the organization to no longer talk about it. So Jerry feels good about it. He's talked to everybody. He wishes Adam well. He's got tremendous respect for Adam LaRoche. Let me just, as we wrap up this topic, which has been talked about ad nauseum, Adam LaRoche had one season with the Chicago White Sox, and he was absolutely, he was terrible. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He had .207. He had 12 homers. He struck out 130-plus times. The team was terrible. And fundamentally, they were awful. It was just a bad season on the South Side last year. Finished 10 games under .500. And how much of that is Adam LaRoche's fault and Drake LaRoche? I don't know how much, but it's some of his fault. I mean, he certainly contributed. They were expecting a lot out of him. They paid him $12 million, and he gave them nothing. That's the reality. And then, for whatever reason, the White Sox didn't communicate with him in the offseason, and we got to spring training, and judging, I think it's very fair to say that new guys got around the team. Jimmy Rollins, who's familiar with winning baseball games, and he sees the culture around the Sox, led by Robin Ventura. And I think some guys pretty clearly had a problem with what was going on. So Kenny Williams ended up getting involved. And Kenny Williams, by the way, has never been a sympathetic figure in this town. A lot of people don't have a lot of love for Kenny Williams. They look at him as a wedge between him and Ozzy was way more popular. And Kenny, you know, he's got that ego going on, so it's kind of hard to, you know, feel the love with Kenny. But right now, everybody is feeling Kenny Williams. I mean, I've listened to a lot of people talk about this, and I don't hear anyone sitting there saying that Kenny Williams is dead wrong and Adam LaRoche was the greatest. No one thinks that. I mean, this one, I think, is pretty cut and dry in the city right now. And it is to me. The White Sox, I actually do think, like, when you rattle things around and you start having real honest conversations, and guys all get in one room and talk about what's bothering them, to me, that's always a win. And if they're not with the program, okay, then you're not with the program. You can go elsewhere, and we will move on. At least it's all on the table. And I think that's what's happened here with the White Sox right now. So to me, actually, this happening, this is the best thing in a convoluted bad way, not that he intended it, but this is the best thing that Adam LaRoche has done for the team. It caused a lot of angst, and maybe, you know, some people might say they're not going to recover from this. I think they will. I mean, at the end of the day, these guys aren't going to want to go out and lose baseball games all year, right? And sometimes when you get angry, you perform better. And Chris Sale was on the mound yesterday. He won a baseball game, gave the ball to Robin Ventura. He was all smiles. He looked engaged to me. And when you're a losing team, sometimes things need to get shaken up. So I really think at the very end of the day with this, and I mean, I don't think LaRoche should have retired, and I don't I think he should have a long look in the mirror as to how he's parenting his kid, but I don't want to go back down that road again. But as far as what this means for the White Sox going forward, I actually think it helps them going into the season. I really do. Everything's moved around. Everyone's talked. People got angry. And if they come out, if they do come out slow and they start losing games, well then, fact of the matter, Robin Ventura, you got to go. You just do. It is on, might not be fair, but it is on the manager right now for these guys to come out and start the season on a positive note and win some games. He's been here too long, and they've got enough talent in there that they should be winning. Their pitching staff is top half of baseball, top half of the American League. There's no reason why the White Sox shouldn't be able to be a competitive team in the American League Central. There really isn't. And they've spent some decent money bringing in more power on the corners with Todd Frazier, 35 bombs. I expect them to start the season well. We'll see if it happens, but I think that this whole thing with Adam LaRoche is actually going to play well for him. Coming back, Scottie Pippen, you're my hero. 720 WGN.
This ball game is over. The San Antonio Spurs end the game on a 9-2 run. They hold the Golden State Warriors to 37 points below their average. They do it with defense tonight as the Spurs improve their home record to 35-0.
We got a shot. Never say die. That was the Spurs Radio Network. San Antonio and the Fighting Cristofloreses beat the Golden State Warriors 87-79. 35-0. The Spurs are at home. And that's, by the way, not good enough for best in the Western Conference with the 62-7. Golden State Warriors. Why do we care about this? Well, I will tell you why. I love watching Golden State play. I root for them as far as entertaining basketball. But I do care about the Chicago Bulls in 72-10. And I'm pro Golden State winning 70. And I'm pro them winning 71. And I can even handle 72. But 73-9, I don't want to see that happen. And Scottie Pippen last night put it out there on Twitter, my guy, shockingly on Twitter, at Scottie Pippen. If 72-10 has any chance of holding up, the Spurs need to take care of business tonight. And he adds on, taking a break from March Madness for this at NBA matchup. So Pip putting it out there and seeing what he wanted to see. Now, Golden State, by the way, they were playing their ninth game in 14 days, dead exhausted. And Steph Curry shot 1 of 12, which he'll probably never do again. At least until he gets old and bad, which is a while away. But so we've got a 62-7 Warrior team to get to 73. That's they need to go 11-2 the rest of the way, and they have to play the San Antonio Spurs in a weird NBA scheduling quirk. They have to play them two more times: one at home where they haven't lost all season, and one at Golden State. So one. However you want to put that. One at San Antonio and one at home. There are other games for you NBA diehards. They're at Minnesota tomorrow. Then they've got the Clippers at home, win. Dallas at home, Philly at home, Washington at home. A lot of wins right there. At Utah, win. Boston at home, win. Portland at home, win. Minnesota at home, win. At Memphis, and then at San Antonio. So those two Spur games coming up here at San Antonio on April the 10th, and then San Antonio at home on April the 7th. That's probably going to decide it right there. We need like one other loss. We need a Spurs victory in one of those two, and then some other something. And I am pro Scottie Pippen and the boys taking it home here. And I'd love to see Golden State win the whole thing, or San Antonio, just not LeBron. The Midwestern University Eye Institute in Downers Grove is now accepting patients. As a full-service clinic, the Eye Institute provides comprehensive eye exams, glasses and contact lenses, eye disease screening and treatment, vision therapy, low vision rehabilitation services, and emergency eye care. It's all at an affordable price, and you can learn more at mwuclinics.com. Call 630-743-4500. That's MWUClinics.com. Call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. Brian Noonan's got a one-hour special coming straight up on 720 WGN.